things for other reasons. So I think if we feel like we're being treated unfairly, we should raise it, we should talk about it. But at the same time, I think we also shouldn't overthink, you know, oh, is that joke targeting me? Mm-hmm. Is that sentence that he said offensive because I'm a woman in the room? Is he not paying attention to what I have to say because I'm a woman? Maybe he just doesn't pay attention to what anyone has anything to say. So yeah, I think there's a balance in everything, and I think it's important to realize that.
Hello and welcome to Alter Everything, a podcast about data science and analytics culture. I'm Maddie Johansson, and I'll be your host. This episode features the one and only Bing-Chen Gao, a legend on the Alteryx community. She lives in London, works for TrueQ, and was the first woman to pass the ridiculously challenging Alteryx Designer Expert exam. It's also the beginning of International Women's Month, and I'm excited to kick off the celebration with this episode. So without further ado, please enjoy my chat with Bing-Chen.
Should I do my intro, actually?
Yeah. What did you study in school? Just kind of introduce yourself.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm Bing-Chen. I am a senior consultant at Concentra Analytics.
At the time of this recording, Concentra was still called Concentra. Now it's TrueQ. So you'll still hear Bing-Chen refer to her workplace as Concentra, but just know that now it's called TrueQ.
I've been in Concentra for about 3 years and been using Alteryx and actually teaching Alteryx for about 3 years. So as a senior consultant, I manage and deliver projects. So the type of projects really range from sort of your data management side of things to data consolidation and create reports, building dashboards, to do analysis and run maybe advanced modeling with machine learning techniques. And recently I've done a project where we used our in-house data warehouse automation tool called Data Plus to build a data warehouse.
Ooh, and Data Plus is now the TrueQ platform.
Which is sort of not the normal range of projects that I would do, but that's really fun. It's very technical, but at the same time, it's quite interesting. Helps me to understand the data warehouse side of things much better and databases. So yeah, that's quite interesting.
So you do everything under the sun, basically.
Yeah, pretty much anything related to data.
Awesome. Yeah, very cool. Well, that makes sense given that you were the first woman to pass the Alteryx expert exam. That's very, very amazing.
Thank you.
So tell me about that experience. I know that you wrote a blog about it on our, it's on the Alteryx community on the Alternation blog. Mm-hmm. But tell me a little bit about that experience.
Okay, so for those people who don't know about the Alteryx expert exam, it's the final step of the trilogy. Is that how you call it?
Trilogy, yeah.
Of
yeah.
The certification. And essentially you can take it at the Inspire conference and you will be given a few sort of scenarios where you need to build workflows to solve problems. And I quite like the exam format because it's very close to what you would actually do in your day-to-day life, especially compared to the core and advanced exams. And it's just really fun because mm-hmm. it's like, you know, solving an escape room challenge where you're trying to find all those clues and you move on to the next one when you solve the previous one, and it's just really exciting.
That's great. I love that analogy to the escape room. So what kind of projects have you been working on now, or what are you looking forward to working on?
So there's this research project that I'm working on at the moment, and it's called Ariman. Have you heard of the time series forecasting model Arima?
Yeah, actually, yeah, that's funny that you bring that up because I believe that my boss, Neil Ryan, I'm pretty sure he used that when we were working together to predict some of our podcast results that we hope to see in years coming up.
Using Arima?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's quite interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically Arima is this linear model for time series modeling. It's called auto-regressive integrated moving average. So what we're doing at the moment is we're looking at combining this linear model, ARIMA, with non-linear model, neural net, to better forecast data that has non-linearity in the data structure. So we are doing the modeling in Python at the moment, but we're also using Alteryx to create custom Python macros so that once it's built and optimized, people can just use the macro just like any other Alteryx tools and use it in Alteryx workflows without having to code.
Very cool. That's great. Awesome. So what are you looking forward to working on in the future?
Right. So in terms of projects that we're going to do in the future, there is actually one in the pipeline, which is about deploying data science projects on Azure services. We're going to collaborate with some of the partner technology partners on this, and it's quite exciting because the Azure Stack, Microsoft Azure Stack, is quite a new and upcoming area, and I'm looking forward to learning all about what we can do in deploying data science projects.
So it sounds like you always want to learn the next new thing. And you just seem, in general, so passionate about analytics. So I'm wondering, what kind of personality traits do you have that has led you to become so passionate?
So actually, really interesting that you asked that, because I felt like it's more my personality defect that's led me to find my career passion in a way.
Okay.
The reason why I say that is because I'm actually quite lazy. I really hate spending time doing, you know, the same thing over and over again if it's, you know, not fun or if it's just repetitive but not intellectually challenging.
Totally.
So, you know, if you ask me to populate some Excel sheet day after day, or doing just the same kind of
mundane, tedious
work.
Yeah.
The same kind of work over and over again, I would get bored really quickly. And being able to use tools like Alteryx and Tableau and other analytics tool allows you to automate the part that's repetitive, the part that's mundane and you don't want to spend all of your time doing, and then allows you to go from there and do some more interesting stuff like decode what kind of information is actually in the data. I think most of people are naturally curious, at least I am. So I'm very curious about, you know, how things work and why things are, you know, the way they are. So yeah, to me, data is like a riddle.
Mm-hmm.
You don't necessarily know what's it about and what's hidden in the data if you don't know how to decode it. But when you have the right tools, when you have the right skill set, there's so much to learn from data usually. And it's not something that's accessible to everyone. So if you were the one to crack the riddle, it's just really satisfactory.
Mm-hmm.
So I find it really fun anyway. I actually think we're all lazy to
totally.
A certain extent. And being lazy is actually a strong force behind, you know, advancement and productivity, because you're trying to get things done faster, maybe more efficiently, so that you don't have to spend as much time next time. That's one of the reasons why I like Alteryx macros a lot, is because being able to, you know, learn from what you've done in the past and package up so that you can use it next time. You can share with other people so that they can use it to solve similar use cases.
Yeah.
Is a great way of, you know, saving time and effort so that you don't have to reinvent the wheel every single time.
As I was listening back to our conversation during the editing process, I decided I wanted to know more about the macros that Bing Chen created, and she sent me two examples.
One thing that we see very often is you have date in your dataset that is in a specific format, and you want to convert it into a different format. There is a daytime tool in Alteryx that allows you to convert those formatted daytime from a string field into a recognized daytime field, and then reformat it into another string field as you specify. So this is a two-step process. and you need to know how to set it up as it's not immediately straightforward. So I built a macro to simplify those two steps into a one-step configuration where you just need to specify the input datetime format and the desired output format, and the tool just does the job for you. Another example is that when you're running a regular data load, for instance, a monthly load, and you want to add the output to a dataset that has all the historical data, you need to check if the current load already exists in the data. And if it does, you need to override the existing part. If it doesn't, then you append the new load to the dataset. And this is a module that I typically build into a monthly data load workflow, which then was turned into a macro. So now it's just a tool you can use before the output.
What other personality traits can you point to that are similar to the laziness piece?
Yeah, so I am very impatient when it comes to seeing outcomes. So the reason why I say that is because I have some friends around me who study science or who are in academia, who are doing research day in and out. And when I look at what they do, I just have so much respect for them, because they have so much patience and they're putting so much effort into one thing day after day, month after month, not knowing when they will be able to see result or even whether they will be able to see result. But those are the kind of work and research that pushes the boundaries of, you know, science. And for me, unfortunately, I feel like I'm not someone that has all those patience to do that. So if I want to, you know, keep my motivation level high, I need to be able to see that feedback. I need to be able to see a bit of outcome from what I have invested. And that's actually what made me like Alteryx so much, because you can invest a small, relatively small amount of time, and you can learn a lot within that time. And I want to mention this concept of a steep learning curve. I know that generally when people mention steep learning curve, they mean something that's difficult to learn. Mm-hmm. But actually, if you look at the plot of the actual learning curve, it's essentially plotting the knowledge level over time. So on the x-axis you have time, on the y-axis you have your level of knowledge, for example. And if that learning curve is steep, it means that within a very short period of time you can learn a lot, your knowledge goes up by a lot. So that actually means something is easy to learn, or it takes a short amount of time to mm-hmm. learn a lot. I don't feel like when I need to learn something in Alteryx, I don't feel like, you know, I have to invest days and hours and weeks of my time, but not getting much out of it. It's quite the opposite. So
yeah,
so that's really good. But at the same time, it has a learning curve that keeps going up, so it doesn't plateau very quickly. Mm-hmm. Even though within a short period of time you can already learn a lot, if you want to continue learning, there's so much more it can do, and there's so much other spaces that you can go into. Actually, yesterday, this Alteryx friend of mine shared a blog that he wrote, which is about making an animation of clock with Alteryx. I had no idea that you can do that, but he actually managed to somehow use a macro to generate 43,000 PNGs and then made that into a video, and it's an Alteryx clock that just goes for 12 hours.
Wow.
What kind of people would spend their evenings doing that, right? People like me or like him, who are nerds about, you know, using those tools for something that's cool but completely useless. But I think there are actually really good use case for it, and I believe right now he's doing a piece of work that's looking at the bikes in a city and sort of where they move to, and using Alteryx to show the animation, which is quite cool. I'm excited to see it.
That's amazing.
I first met Bing Chen at Inspire London in 2019, and I knew that she had attended our Women of Analytics panel luncheon. So similar to the discussion that took place on that panel, I wanted to know what Bing Chen's experience has been like so far as a woman in the analytics industry.
Okay, so funny you ask. For me, I'm actually quite used to being the only girl in the room, mm-hmm. or sometimes the only, you know, non-white person in the room, or sometimes the only non-native English speaker in the room.
Mm-hmm. And your first language is?
It's Chinese. So I was born and raised in China. Spent first 25 years in China.
Cool.
So yeah, I'm so used to that being the case that I don't even think about it anymore. Well, actually, I didn't even think about it from the beginning because it's always been the case. And I only thought about it when it was brought to my attention, almost like it's pointed out to me that, oh, hey, like, you're the minority here sometimes.
Yeah, so when it's been pointed out to you, is it in a way of, like, they want your perspective to better understand where you're coming from, or do you think it comes from almost like a tokenism type situation?
Often it's sort of just like, you know, jokingly, in a friendly way that people say, oh, hey, like, you know, do you notice that you're the only woman here?
Mm-hmm.
I can recall situations where maybe someone said something and I wasn't thinking much of it. I don't see the benefit of paying too much attention to it. For example, often I walk into a training room and it's a room full of white male. But why does that matter? You know, it shouldn't matter that I'm training a room full of white male.
Like, you would be the trainer, you're the instructor.
Yeah, I'm the instructor.
Okay.
So, it shouldn't matter to me, just like it shouldn't really matter to them that I am, you know, a young-looking Asian girl mm-hmm. that's going to train them. It really should be, you know, what kind of things I have to say, how I deliver the training, how knowledgeable I actually am in the topics that I'm going to talk about. I think sometimes it's about perspective, and I think we should all beware of the self-fulfilling prophecy. If we keep thinking that people are treating us differently because of my gender, because of my skin color, because of my age even, then maybe it will become true because I'm going to act differently because I think people are treating me differently. On the other side, sometimes people don't mean to do that, or they're not doing that. They're just treating me as me and they're doing things for other reasons. So I think if we feel like we're being treated unfairly, we should raise it. We should talk about it. But at the same time, I think we also shouldn't overthink, you know, oh, is that joke targeting me? Mm-hmm. Is that sentence that he said offensive because I'm a woman in the room? Is he not paying attention to what I have to say because I'm a woman? Maybe he just doesn't pay attention to what anyone has anything to say. I think there's a balance in everything, and I think it's important to realize that.
So, yeah, one of the topics that was discussed at the Women of Analytics panel was about if women were expected to go get coffee or take notes. And I'm curious if you've ever run into either of those scenarios or anything similar to that.
So nothing to the extent that I was asked to get coffee or take notes because I'm a woman. But I did get asked to change my shoes before going into a meeting.
Hmm.
And just for context, I was wearing, you know, those sort of off-white Stan Smith city trainers.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wearing a smart dress. So not sort of your yoga pants and gym trainers. And it wasn't strictly a client meeting either. And it was like a, you know, friendly sort of reminder thing. So I didn't take it sort of the wrong way, or I wasn't resentful about the request. And I did change, and I completely understand where they're coming from, because there's a certain expectation in the industry of, you know, how maybe consultants should look like when they're having client meetings. But it just made me a little bit sad. And I don't think, again, I don't think this is just about gender. I think there is also an expectation for men in terms of how they should look, what they should wear, etc. But I just kind of wish that, you know, if only one day people could just make their professional judgment based on what kind of value people bring into the meeting room, and you know, what I have to say and how I behave and what value I add, instead of how I look like or what I wear. I don't think me coming to the meeting room with high heels adds any additional value to that meeting itself. If anything, you know, I was distracted a little bit.
I personally, I don't know how I would react. Your approach, even when you're telling the story, you're very understanding. It seems like you're really trying to kind of understand things from all angles before you kind of make your judgment on the situation. But I think your call out about how we put so much into appearance and valuing appearance is strange, given that, you know, the work that you produce, like, it's not like your face is on, you know, whatever work that you produce, or it's not like your workflow has your face as a signature on it. You know what I mean? So it's, I think it is a strange kind of phenomenon that we have in the workplace and just in general in the world, that we, you know, we value that so much. So I think it's, you know, your approach to it is probably a very healthy one.
Yeah, I think it's the easiest way to deal with it is probably just, you know, do as you're told, because, you know, there's no conflict. You know, you ask me to change shoes, I'll just change shoes. Mm-hmm. But equally, I think it's very important for us to think about those things. You know, where are the expectations coming from? And are they justified? Because there might be situations where, you know, what you wear is important. For instance, if you on a flight and the flight attendant were not wearing something special, you might not know where to get help.
Right.
You might not know who to speak to. But in those other situations, certain expectations, I think it's just, you know, less justified. And things are changing as well. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, women are expected to dress in a different way than what we're expected now. Mm-hmm. And there's a reason for those changes. And I think it's important for us to keep thinking, you know, the expectations, the standards in place right now, are they justifiable? And do we want to fight to protect it, or do we want to fight to change it?
Mm-hmm.
And also, one thing that I find quite interesting is sometimes you hear people talk about some more senior people showing up in more casual clothes, or people who are more focused or specialized in technical fields showing up with maybe trainers or t-shirts, and that's completely fine or more acceptable. Why is that? You know, like, why is it more acceptable for the senior managers or directors or presidents to wear casual clothes, but less so for more junior people? Is that justified? Why is it okay for more nerdy people to wear t-shirts, but not so much for business consultants? Why is that? I choose this industry because I like the things that we do. I like the work. I like the challenges. I like the things I produce. I like the value I add for my clients. I like the problems I solve. Does that have to mean that I have to take whatever the industry expect me to wear as well? I think, you know, it's a question that we should all think about.
I completely agree. I think we should always think about and kind of question why things are the way that they are, especially if they've been that way for forever, you know what I mean? So
yeah. And also in certain countries, in Asia, women are expected to wear makeup, or in certain industries, women are expected to wear makeup. And if you don't, people challenge you and say, this is rude. And I don't know how you feel about that, but a lot of people here around me in UK or in London, when they hear that, they find it unbelievable. You know, they find it incredible and say, you know, what is that? You shouldn't be asked to wear makeup. But how is that different from, you know, being asked to wear high heels or,
agreed,
you know, a certain kind of clothes? And I actually have this foot condition that prevents me to wear heels for a long time, which I didn't actually tell that person. I didn't tell anyone at work.
Yeah.
It's only relevant to a certain extent because I am in pain when I wear heels. But at the same time, even if I'm not, I would like people to make their judgment based on what I have to say and what I have to add to the project, what I have to contribute, rather than, you know, what footwear I show up with in a business meeting.
I can't believe that, though. Like, that's...
it's a bit sad.
It's sad. And, like, the makeup thing, too, it's... I love the days when I don't wear makeup. And then it's like, if I want to put on makeup, then it's because I want to, not because, like, I'm expected to, you know? And it is sad that people feel that pressure, you know, and especially... you know, if you think about, like, just, yeah, like, the gender expectations, too. People who maybe they don't identify with that gender, or, you know, maybe they, you know, everybody's on some sort of spectrum, and, you know, wherever you fall, if that's not, if you don't align with, like, the girliest of the girly, then, you know, that's somehow a problem. That's, I don't think that that's right, but.
Yeah, exactly that.
So, did you have heels on hand? Or,
like, I kept a pair. I keep a pair in
at
the
work.
Office.
Yeah.
And that's why it's not a foreign thought. It's not something that surprises me, because I know the industry expectation, but still makes me a little bit sad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And another thing is, I think it's broader than that. It's not just about gender. It's not just about ethnicity. It's about workplace being more inclusive. It's about diversity. It's about perspective. Gender is really visible, but not everything is. There are other things that are less so. And what do you do with those? So who looks out for, you know, shy, modest, quiet male employees? They don't necessarily fit any of the tags that we're talking about just now.
Mm-hmm.
But they might need support in terms of their how to boost their confidence level, how to make them more comfortable talking about their achievement, or how to recognize their achievement at workplace.
Exactly, because we don't really have luncheons for people who are shy or people who might be a little socially awkward. Like, I totally feel like I can be in some certain settings, I can totally work myself up into some, like, weird anxious feeling where, you know, if I walk into a room with people that I don't know, or mm-hmm. feel like I really need to be on it, you know, that can be tough for me. And so those social settings can be tricky to tackle, and like you said, they're not visible for people to really see.
Yeah, exactly. And when I think of team building activities, a lot of times in London, I don't know about the rest of Europe, but in London, a lot of that involves going to, you know, pubs and bars after work, mm-hmm. maybe have a drink, have a chat. What about those people who don't drink?
Yeah.
And if that is the only team building activity, then they will feel left out. And you can say that, oh, hey, they can just show up, they can order an orange juice, whatnot. And they absolutely can. They can make that effort to go to places that they don't enjoy going just to hang out with those other people who are drinking. But, you know, should we also consider, hey, there are those people in our team who enjoy a different kind of outing, social outing. Should we ask their opinion for the next social outing? What do we do?
Mm-hmm.
And I think those are the things that are less visible, and it's as important to think about.
Yeah, 100%. Maybe people want to go home early. Maybe they have kids at home. Maybe, you know, like there's a lot of different scenarios that are hard to understand if you aren't asking people and getting to know them and really trying to understand their preferences and what they're comfortable with.
Another thing that I think is very important is mental health at workplace. We start to talk about it more and more, but I think there's still some kind of stigma around it. Because whenever you say mental health, usually what people think about is like mental illness, mm-hmm. right? But actually, the word itself, the phrase itself, is referring to health. And I think we just need to sort of maybe tell ourselves to shift the mindset a little bit. And it's important to be able to talk about those things, you know, when you're feeling anxious or feeling stressed, either at work or just in life in general. And it's very important because it can affect everyone. I was reading about some stats on mental health, and it seems like the most consistent number in terms of, you know, how many people are affected by mental health problems at workplace is that 1 in 6 people at any point in time is affected by mental health issues. At any point in time. And we all know that it comes and goes. It's not something that, you know, kind of sticks with you and you have that all the time. So as, you know, a manager, a people manager, it's important because I need to know everyone is doing their best. Everyone can do their best. As someone who managed projects, I need to know that, you know, people are happy working on the projects. People are delivering at the level that they can deliver. And I guess as business owners, you want to know that, you know, all those talents that you tried so hard to hire are performing at the level that they can perform to their best. So I think it absolutely affects everyone, and it should be something that, you know, if it becomes relevant at any point in time, there's a good reason to not ignore it.
As a leader, you can really tell that Bing Chen is honed in on the health and well-being of her team. So as I was editing, again, I wanted to reach back out to her and ask her to provide more tangible examples for ways to encourage this well-being in your own life and amongst your teams. Here's how she responded.
I found guided meditation and yoga really great in helping me take a step back and remind myself what I value and what really matters to me in life. Talk therapy and exercises also work for some people. Eat and rest well if you can. There are mental health professional services out there that might be available to you, so reach out to your HR or insurance provider to see what options you have.
Something that I read the other day was from the World Health Organization.
Mm-hmm.
They have this entire section on their website for mental health, which I thought was really cool. And within that, they specifically talk about mental health in the workplace. And then specifically also within there is burnout.
Yeah.
So, you know, just like feeling exhausted and negative and, you know, maybe cynical about your job, just really not enjoying it. And what I thought was really interesting is that they actually included burnout in their 11th revision of the International Classification of Diseases as an occupational phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
So very significant, you know, way for them to kind of describe burnout. And first and foremost, it should be about the human being and how they're feeling. When you also look at the rest of the data that was included at the World Health Organization on their website, they were saying things like the economic impact, mm-hmm. and, you know, like the dollars that it costs for these people to feel burnt out.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they included some interesting data points where they were saying, you know, every US dollar that's put into scaled up treatment for common mental disorders, there's a return of $4 in improved health and productivity. So again, it's just, you know, it's that cycle of if you take care of your employees, then mm-hmm. they'll be happier and probably produce better work.
So, yeah. Actually, I read something kind of in that space as well.
Yeah.
And it was saying that 1 in 5 of the people who took days off work, they took it off because of stress or anxiety related reasons. But actually 90% of those people reported different reasons. So they actually gave work different reasons for why they need days off. So I think people still don't feel comfortable talking about their suffering from those sort of symptoms that's related to their mental status.
Mm-hmm.
And there was another stats that's saying of those people who took days off because of mental health issues, they are more likely to take more days off, which I found quite interesting because you can translate, you know, days off to cost to an organization, and those are all really important. It is very important. Like you said, people are important, but money is very important for organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And you mentioned burnout earlier. I think it is something that can be prevented, and it is something that, you know, we would like to prevent before it happens, because usually when it happens, it's already too late. I've had people around me who suffer serious physical condition because of burnout.
Mm-hmm.
And usually when it gets to that stage, it's too late. And I personally have some experience of that too. You know, sometimes I feel like my chest is really tight or find it hard to breathe. And I've got my heart checked out and there's nothing wrong.
Yeah.
So, you know, it might be stress related.
Yeah.
But you don't want to get to the situation, or you don't want to get to the stage where it's affecting your physical health, because it might be too late. It might take longer to go back to the, you know, healthy status.
Right.
So I think we should just check in with ourselves all the time, check in with our friends all the time, check in with our colleagues if we can, check in with people around us if we think they're not themselves that day.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe, you know, just take them out for a walk, take them out for a coffee.
Yeah.
Yeah, it makes a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
Did you catch that background noise? Yeah, you heard that correctly. It was the sound of a couple of my colleagues playing ping pong in the next room where Bing Chen and I were recording. And then you heard me running out of the room to kindly ask them to pause their ping pong game until we were done recording. But, you know, hey, my coworkers were simply engaging in their own version of a mental health break, so I'm all for it.
So moving into our section for community picks, this is one of my favorite sections because we can, you know, shout out the useful learnings that, you know, we've found throughout the week and share it with the audience. So what is your community pick this week, or picks? You can have more than one.
Okay, so I have two.
Cool.
And they were both not super related to analytics. I'm sorry. So the first one is a podcast called Science Versus, and I really, really like this podcast because, well, primarily because of the content. There's a lot of researches, numbers, facts, and some opinion mm-hmm. about interesting topics. So there are things like, you know, vaccination, is it safe? Ketogenic diet, does it work?
Yeah.
Hypnosis, how does it work, or does it actually work? So I find those topics quite interesting, and it has a really fantastic and really charming host mm-hmm. as well. So I love her accent, and she talks like she's smiling and laughing all the time. So I absolutely enjoyed it.
Yeah, that's a great one.
So the second one is a program called Letters Life. Have you heard of it?
Mm-mm.
So basically, as the name suggests, it's bringing letters life. So it's a bunch of people. So it's, you know, this organization. They organize a bunch of people to come together and read out letters to people. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a concert, but for letters. And yeah, they invite all kinds of, you know, celebrities, or I'm really bad with celebrities, so I don't know most of them, but I know Cumberbatch was there.
Oh, cool.
Before, and Tom Hiddleston was there before, and some of those sessions were recorded or filmed as well. So if you're curious, you can find it on YouTube. Just search for Letters Life. My all-time favorite is a letter read by Tom Hiddleston, and it was called All This I Did Without You.
Wow.
And it's a letter written by Gerald Durrell to his wife, and it's absolutely beautiful, and it's really funny as well, and it was really, really well performed. So sometimes I find, you know, I find myself bored or stressed, or, you know, just want something different, I find those videos and watch them, and it's just fantastic. And also, if you're interested in those letters, you can buy the books called Letters of Note. So it's a collection of letters in all kinds of styles about all kinds of topics, and they're super interesting.
That sounds amazing, and I definitely will be checking that out. I actually, I just inherited a bunch of, so my dad's dad was in the Korean War, so like when they first met in the 50s, he was over there, and then they would just write letters back and forth, and she kept all the letters that he sent to her, and I don't know if he kept all of hers, but probably not, because it's probably hard to keep a ton of letters around when you're in the military. But anyway, so I just inherited all the letters and I started going through them. And it is like, letter writing is just such a lost art. You know, we don't do that anymore.
I know, right?
So it's really interesting to see when people will, like, what they talk about. And, you know, there's a couple where he would say, oh, I loved your perfumed letter, because like she would just, you know, like spray perfume, and so just, you know, little things like that where it's so romantic, but also it's such a human connection. So having an actor who has, you know, a very pronounced voice, or, you know, a really charming or professional way of delivering a message, I can see that being really powerful. So I'm very intrigued by this. It sounds
What you think.
Yeah, absolutely, very cool. My community pick this week is the Alan Turing Institute. So when I knew we were going to discuss mental health, and I was doing a bit of research, and I stumbled upon their website, and they have this entire section of their website for data science for mental health, which I thought was really, really cool. And they actually list out different research areas and goals that the researchers in this group have identified, and they organize these monthly meetings that are held at the Turing here in London. So in the past, these meetings have included agenda topics such as intro to data-driven disease progression modeling. That was by a person named Neil Oxtoby. And then there was another one, data-driven modeling of disease subtypes and their progression, by Alexandra Young. Their website prompts users to join their mailing list for more information and updates. And we'll be sure to link to that page in the show notes. But I think, you know, if you're living in London and you want to go to these meetings, I don't know if they're open to the whole community or if you can get recaps, or I don't know the whole process. But again, I'll link that mailing list to the show notes. But yeah, I mean, just to have a full group of people at such a prestigious institute like the Turing Institute, I think would be really fascinating to learn more about. So I know I'm definitely going to keep looking into it, but I hope our audience does as well.
Yeah, that sounds great. I'm definitely going to look into it.
Yeah. Cool.
Thanks for tuning in. You can find links on the topics discussed in today's episode at community.alterx.com/podcast, where you can also leave comments and join in on our discussion. To share this episode with your networks, be sure to use #AlterEverythingPodcast. And to share the episode for International Women's Month, use #IWD2020 or #EachForEqual. Bonus points if you include a link to the episode either from the community, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcast app. Catch you next time.